From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The states that are really growing don't force unionization into their economy. People can choose whether to join a union or not. I believe that's the right thing. And I'm not advocating that Illinois become a right-to-work state. I do not advocate that. But I do advocate local governments, local voters, being able to decide for themselves whether to be right-to-work areas, right-to-work zones.
He's talking about limiting the rights of working people to organize and be in a union, which is proven around the country to drive down wages 4 to 7%. This is the first thing he wants to talk about?
Groups that contract with the state should not be making campaign contributions to the people across the table from whom they're negotiating. That's a fundamental conflict of interest.
You mean like an absolute contract?
There are many examples.
Well, this is extraordinary coming from a man who spent $20 million of his own money to, some would say, buy an election.
Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner takes aim at labor unions. We heard there from the governor and Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, one of the state's biggest unions. Rauner has been delivering a series of lectures as he prepares for his first State of the State address next week. We'll talk about that and more on this edition of State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse is away. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program on the Springfield campus of the University of Illinois, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and our guest is Kurt Erickson, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises, which publishes newspapers in the Quad Cities, Bloomington, Decatur, and Carbondale. Welcome, Kurt.
It's good to be here.
So, Governor Rauner has been making a speaking tour. He started out last week in Chicago, speaking to some university students there. He went to a community college in Decatur this week and then was speaking at a hotel in Champaign. Amanda, you are at the event in Decatur. Can you give us sort of an overview? What is the governor doing here as he's going on these PowerPoint lectures?
That is a good way to put it. I had once described it, I think, as almost like he's being a professor, teaching everybody what in his eyes is wrong with the state and bringing it down. And there's a wide range of topics that he spreads that blame across, be it everything from Illinois and its trial practices and why he says Illinois needs tort reform to unemployment levels. I mean, the works. And what was particularly interesting and relevant, however, was that he's kind of added on each of these stops that he makes. He'll drop a little nugget of information about where he stands on an issue. And so he had, previously given this sort of speech to students at the University of Chicago. He talked to suburban mayors at this Decatur event was when he really slammed into unions. And it included talk about the prevailing wage, project labor agreements, and most notably, and what has really gotten a lot of attention, is right to work zones. He says he doesn't want this statewide, but he believes that people should have, freedom to decide whether or not they want to join a union. And I'm sure, Brian, you'll get to this. That's at least how he phrases it, how he's trying to sell it on a local basis.
Yeah, Kurt, I was really intrigued with this term he was using, forced unionization. That was a new one on me, but I was doing a little research. It turns out, that's long been used by conservatives who favor right to work, which is in and itself is a bit of a politically loaded phrase, isn't it? I mean, maybe you can talk a little bit about what are these right to work zones that the governor is proposing here?
Well, that's what we don't know, the mechanics of this. And the opponents to right to work are call it right to work for less. The union folks call it that because they say it allows companies to pay lower salaries because they're not, bargaining with the unions that they're putting to work on trades and labor type of jobs. So the mechanics, we just don't know what he means. Is he going to try and push something through the legislature that would empower local communities or counties to do this? If that's the case, that probably isn't going to happen because the Democrats who control the General Assembly are totally against this. Or Is he going to go after this Kentucky model that's happening where a similar situation that's not, you know, these kind of laws aren't going to get through the legislature there. So individual counties, I suppose, backed by some conservative groups are just declaring themselves right-to-work counties. And, of course, this is going to be, you know, dealt with in the courts because the unions have taken them to, you know, to
In Kentucky, there was just some controversy because I think the state attorney general, who's a Democrat, had said that, no, you can't do this. But some of these counties are doing it anyway now. And you're right. The unions, this is going to end up in court. Just so people understand, I mean, it's my understanding that you don't actually have to join a union. You can work at a place. And if the union, like, let's say a grocery store, I know, you know, a lot of kids start out working in grocery stores. I had friends who worked in grocery stores in the Chicago area growing up. There were unionized workers at that grocery store. The teenagers didn't join the union, but they had a little bit taken out of their paycheck to help fund union activities. So, Charlie, maybe you can talk a little bit about that, this idea of forced unionization and how that really works in the workplace.
Well, I think it varies from workplace to workplace. When I started at the Sun-Times 40-some years ago, it was then, and it still is, a union newspaper. Sun-Times reporters and editors are part of the Chicago Newspaper Guild. And when I started, there was a six-month period after which you were expected to join the guild. So it was, in that sense, it was a closed shop. There are other arrangements where, as you suggested, there is a union that represents the workers, but you're not forced to join the union. If you choose not to, you pay a contribution, but it's less than what a union member would pay, because a union member's contribution would also fund some of the political activities that the union would do, for example, donating to candidates or lobbying, whereas a non-union worker's contribution to the union would only cover the expenses directly related to contract bargaining over hours, wages, conditions of employment, those kinds of things. So it varies from place to place. The question that I would have about whether, as apparently the governor would like to see, as an example, could Sangamon County declare itself a right-to-work zone? I'm not sure that in general municipalities, be they counties or cities, that are not home rule units would have that power. I'm not even sure if a home rule unit would. The general rule of thumb is that all local government is a creature of the state. The state is the sovereign. It creates local governments. It tells them what they can and can't do. And unless the state expressly tells a local government, yes, you can do this, the local government has no power to do it on its own. And that's what Homer was about. It gave greater local authority to certain cities of a certain population size and to Cook County to make kind of local decisions on their own. And the classic example that was used back at the time of the convention of why Chicago wanted home rule was years before the city wanted to change the color of the lights on its squad cars. They had to come down to Springfield and get a law passed to allow them to do that. Mm-hmm. Now with home rule, they can go ahead and do that. But I would be dubious that Sangamon County, as an example, because it is not a home rule entity, that the Sangamon County Board could say, okay, we're going to be a right-to-work county.
Right. I'm sure there will be a lot of legal arguments over this. Amanda, I wanted to ask you about, that was not the only union thing we heard from the governor this week. He also talked about a ban on contributions from groups that contract with state government. That was how he put it. Reporters would say, do you mean labor unions? And he would just say, contributions from groups that contract with state government. And there are many groups. We need to look at this ban. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So what that came up in was more of a question and answer period. So that wasn't part of the PowerPoints explicitly. During the PowerPoints, I mean, he talked about this quote-unquote corrupt bargain. That's what we've heard from him, the line government union bosses, and why he's so upset about it. And is because you look at unions, the money that they have given to individuals, can't to politicians, like, for example, former Governor Pat Quinn, and then it's up to Quinn to bargain a contract with them or to, you know, deal with pensions. And I think right there, you hear from unions and they say, well, hey, wait a second. We did give a lot of money to Governor Pat Quinn, but do you see what he did to us? He signed this pension law that we're fighting in court that reduces our retirement benefits. There's no corrupt bargain here. That would be illegal. And furthermore, how is that any different than the massive contributions that you've taken in, say, from your buddy Ken Griffin, who made a Center for Public Integrity list that Rauner himself was on, but also Ken Griffin for his donations to Rauner in the 2014 election cycle of the top donors nationwide to state races in 2014. But Rauner really feels like this is a problem. He thinks that that is what has driven up costs in the state of Illinois, and he also had previously mentioned something along these lines of his being very upset that trial lawyers have done so much funding of judges' campaigns to get on the bench. So it's right now, same with Right to Work, it's difficult to really take it any steps further in terms of what does he mean, what doesn't he mean, how would this work, is it legal, is it not, because it's just proposals. It's not legislation, and he is very disciplined still, whereas he's taking more question and answer opportunities, I think, than on the campaign trail. He's every bit as disciplined in terms of his responses, and we don't know what he wants to do with it.
It's really confusing because the campaign is over, and yet he's reviving these themes that he talked about back in the primary, and then these kind of anti-union jabs were gone they disappeared during the general election, and now they're back after he's won. So I don't quite understand why he's kind of still on the campaign trail in the week leading up to his State of the State speech, unless we're just going to all agree that the State of the State speech is nothing but a political tool that he's using for political purposes.
Well, as somebody who's
listened to State of State speeches going back a very long time, that's exactly what they are. Yeah.
Yes.
They're an opportunity for an administration, and typically, it'll be a governor speaking about what he's already done, because most of the time it's a governor who's been in office. And they'll say, here are the great things that I did, all these wonderful things, and here's my agenda to make Illinois even better. And they're really not anything that you can look at as being a hard blueprint. They're kind of like pie in the sky and wishful thinking. Go back and look at some of the things that Pat Quinn suggested in his State of the State, or Rod Blagojevich, or George Ryan, or Jim Edgar, or Jim Thompson, That stuff doesn't, by and large, happen. The real nitty-gritty occurs when a governor has to produce a budget. That's where you finally get down to facts and details and away from all this rhetoric.
But nonetheless, this rhetoric, I think, is really important for two reasons. First of all, we were all kind of wondering, the big question was, what will Rauner be like when he's no longer a candidate and when he is a governor? And figuring out kind of what his true colors are, because there was such a change in his kind of public persona during the primary to him as a general election candidate. And this kind of turnaround, he's talking about a turnaround team and turning around Illinois' finances. The turnaround of Rauner and returning to this anti-union rhetoric, which, some folks are trying to say, I think that is an anti-union, but unions feel that way. I think that is a safe phrase. So he's going back there, number one. And number two, it's really telling, this, rhetoric, this kind of his political push here, because it will define what happens with the budget and so many other things.
I would argue that's probably, you're not going to get anything specific in the State of the State. It's going to be a continuation of the campaign, and we won't see anything.
But the point being that he'll use what he's saying now is changing. He's done all this work. He's met with legislators one-on-one. He's tried to schmooze them, go out to dinner, going to the movies. And yet these remarks, I think, have the potential to really turn off a lot of legislators or scare them. Democrats who were willing to work with him and now say, wait a second, we thought we were going to, have room to compromise a bit. And this is kind of getting things off on a warpath. And even a lot of Republicans who have big union members in their districts and are so excited, you know, to have this GOP governor. And as Kurt said, if you do need to push it through the General Assembly or even a lot of questions about this right to work, is it legal, constitutional, what have you, it's kind of going out on a limb, perhaps unnecessarily, when there are so many other fights down the road. It's setting the stage, one may argue. That's clearly what he's trying to do. And I think one could say it's going to make things harder for him right away, right off the bat.
Amanda, yeah, I want to pick up
targeting.
I just want to say, Kurt, I actually wanted to ask you. I wanted to pick up on something that Amanda said, which is, you know, Rauner is at pains to say, I'm not anti-union. People are trying to paint me as anti-union. I'm not anti-union. He also says, I don't want Illinois to be a right-to-work state. I just want it to be a state with right to work. The unions do clearly view this as an attack, kind of a frontal attack on them, right, Kurt? I mean, what are you hearing?
From,
yeah. So, I mean, how are they responding to this?
They're getting out and going to the legislature and, you know, saying, you know, here's what this means, what Bruce Rauner said on this, and here's what that means. And they're handing out fact sheets and making phone calls and putting out public statements. And it's just that's why I'm a little bit puzzled about why he's coming out with this, because if he's trying to set up some kind of, negotiating tactic when the AFSCME contract comes up at the end of this fiscal year, that's great. You know, he's trying to set, you know, where he stands on unions, but there isn't that much savings to be had in a contract that, you know, against what the state is facing, in its overall budget situation. So it just seemed overly harsh in coming out so strong. But back to what Charlie was saying, it's politics.
Yeah, and Charlie, you want to get in there?
I was thinking about this, and there's two possibilities. One is that he's coming on really hard so that later he can give a little bit and he'll be seen as, oh, he's a compromiser and he's willing to negotiate and work things out. You start with an unreasonable position and then you move to a slightly less unreasonable position and it's seen as progress. Another thing is, who is his audience? Could he be playing to a national audience, to the fat cats who fund Republican national candidates? You know, you might say, oh, this guy can't be thinking about the White House, can he? But yeah, I'm sure he can. And he would not be the first Illinois governor to be thinking about the White House even before he sets foot in the executive mansion. Look at the stuff that Rod Blagojevich did his first couple of years, where he was doing things to attract attention on a national stage. We in Illinois figured out pretty quickly what kind of a guy he was, but the national media were still being duped.
I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more from Governor Rauner. One of the things he did do, and we'll talk about this just ahead, is begin stimulating the Illinois economy with the salaries of some of his top aides. That and more up ahead. This is State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Lee Newspaper's Kurt Erickson. I'm Brian Mackey. The Associated Press had a report this week that found that Governor Rauner is paying his top staff members significantly more than those who worked for his predecessors. They looked at the salaries of 10 top staffers and found they were up by roughly $380,000. Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that Rauner has said that he wants to attract the most talented team that he can possibly assemble. And that's how he is going to turn around Illinois. And he is, of course, the first executive order means that perhaps the people who have signed on may have to work a little harder if they were to leave the administration. They won't be able to go and lobby. They will not be able to have their meals paid for by lobbyists. at all. Illinois had this $75 threshold. He's also pulled some talent from, you know, out of state. So that appears to be why Rauner believes that these people are, you know, worth these extra in cases, say, 80, you know, you might have a salary where I believe, say, Quinn's press person had been making around $100,000. Let's up that by $30,000 or up a salary by $80,000. Really some big figures here. And where I think it is going to cause trouble for Bruce Rauner is that it comes even as he has in these PowerPoint presentations been talking about how state workers seemingly make too much. Payroll for the state is too high. He wants to dig into that AFSCME contract and pay less. So it's, again, very hard to parse what exactly the governor means. I've seen, you know, a lot of feedback that says what? So it's okay for you and the highest paid state employees that you work closely with to be paid more so that the lower end workers can be paid less. It feeds into the image of him that Quinn tried so hard to paint on the campaign trail is an out-of-touch near billionaire who doesn't care about the poor folk.
Yeah, and what I thought was really interesting is that some of his inner circle is paid more, or are paid more than some of the people who run state agencies. You know, a person who has to answer the phone when I call with a question about, you know, X, Y, or Z is getting paid more than somebody who has to oversee an agency with hundreds of employees and is accountable for the behavior of all of those employees, which then serves, you know, let's say, you know, a segment of society that needs help. And, you know, so I just thought that was kind of an ironic.
And you do look at this and, you know, maybe that's what it takes to get somebody in there to shake things up. But one that has gotten a lot of attention prior to the governor's top staff is, you know, the chief of staff to the first lady and questions. So who is she chief of staff to? What have you?
Because there's
and that's
no $100,000
right? Salary. I mean, right. There's no staff. $100,000. I believe that's about $20,000 prior to her last highest paid position. You know, you would say most people would probably take a job at $80,000. What sort of bargaining went on to get it up that high? So, again, I just think it presents a political issue for Bruce Rauner, one that he clearly is willing to take on. They had to have known these things when they offered those salaries, but it's going to continue, I think, to present itself as we go into these union negotiations all year long.
And one last point on that, or one more point on that, they kind of fumbled their answer to the Associated Press. They could have said, we've restructured the inner circle, the cabinet position, so that these people are doing more. And I did a little bit of checking, and in the case of a couple of the spokespeople, they are, you know, heading up more agencies. You know, a governor spokesman is also doing the budget office spokesperson job. So that person's doubled up, and they're making more money, but they didn't say that. So, you know, just it's horrible optics.
Spokesmaneering,
well, it strikes me as being somewhat hypocritical to be handing out really high-paying jobs to your inner circle. They may be the most talented people in the world. At the same time, you're demonizing state workers, the people out there doing the online stuff, the prison guards, the first responders, the child abuse investigators. These folks are all overpaid in Bruce Rauner's rhetoric. At the same time, you put people in positions where you really don't have to go out and deal with dangerous individuals or troubled families, and you're paying them boku bucks. I mean, it just looks bad. And it would be easier for me to accept the rationale. Well, we have to pay to get this top talent if at the same time you weren't bemoaning the fact that middle-class people working for the state of Illinois are getting a decent wage.
Well, and it's so hard because as we've spent much of this show talking about that, and particularly in relations to unions, he also had a couple of weeks back this video to Allstate employees. And when he makes these presentations, the governor says, I want Illinois to be a great place to work. I want teachers to be paid a great and healthy salary. I believe in teachers and their importance. I want state employees to be paid more, and I want to give them bonuses. So it's literally, you know, in the same speech, I want Illinois to be a great place to work, and I want state employees to be paid well. And in the same speech, talking about the what he terms too much in terms of pension benefits and too high of a state employee payroll. I should also add, you know, I think the governor's team's kind of also defense of this. They point out that the governor himself is not taking any salary or $1 one, I believe.
Well, and that's true. But I mean, this is something I wondered about, because he has talked before mm-hmm. he came in about how many, you know, how you do have to pay to get top staff, and how he also talked about, though, how government is a sacrifice. And you kind of the great model is, as I believe it was Congressman Aaron Schock talked about during the inaugural ceremony about Cincinnatus, right? That you leave your private sector work and you come work for the people for a time, and then you go back to it. And that doesn't seem to be in keeping with...
And he said that that's what he wants. He said that he's been, you know, trying to do that. And he has so many people knocking down the doors that just care about this state. He said sometimes it has been difficult to recruit because of the executive order restrictions, that largely he has people who care and want to do this job. So, but as you said, Brian, clearly, evidently, some of these individuals were willing to sacrifice for a, I think many would say, decent wage.
Yeah, a very decent wage. Yeah. And I mean, I kind of wondered before going into this if maybe he would. I mean, remember, December 31st, he kicked in another $10 million to his campaign fund. That's on top of more than $27 million he'd contributed to his own campaign. It seems like surely, you know, if he wanted to, he could have come up with some sort of outside bonus system or something like that. I don't know what the legality of that is, but I mean, it seems like there would have been other routes. And it's just such a high price. You can believe that AFSCME and these other unions are going to be talking about the guys walking in the prisons and putting their lives on the line every day when they're up in their contract negotiations versus these top staffers who are getting huge salary increases. Well, over, not themselves, but over their predecessors. Time now for notes from the field. So I'm going to begin with Kurt Erickson.
Well, this week I went back and checked the 2014 totals for video gambling in Illinois. It's kind of like the second full year of video gambling, which pays for road construction and school construction. And it essentially, the revenue to the state essentially doubled. The number of machines is now over 19,000 in, you know, everywhere from bars and taverns and restaurants and fraternal organizations. But that means the state is pulling in $165 million, at least last year. It continues to grow. That number is up, you know, doubled over, more than doubled over $75 million the year before. So if you're wondering that, you know, if you see these things everywhere you go, they are everywhere you go.
And it is making a difference to the state's bottom line. Charlie Wheeler, about 30 seconds.
Well, the delay in issuing licenses for medical marijuana is not just a blow to the people suffering from illnesses that would be eligible to receive this medication. It's also hurting the state in that a market research group reported earlier last week that the market is only going to be worth about $6 million because of delays in issuing licenses, but when the program is fully operational, it could be worth about $36 million.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Kurt Erickson of Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of this show on WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.